Coming up, Mike and I are back with episode 11 of Breakfast with the Beats, and it's a good one. First, we talk about players we're targeting on the waiver wire this weekend, and I can't believe that I'm actually recommending the pitcher that I am. So stay tuned for that. Afterwards, we analyze three beat writer articles discussing the future of the, quote, suddenly healthy Houston Astros, the rise of Jacob Latz, and what we think of the contending St. Louis Cardinals. Now, chances are a small hint of Davey Downer actually makes his way into my prediction, but you'll have to see. Then we look at three rotations and three lineups that fantasy players should target in the coming weeks. And honestly, doing this is something that can really help you win your week. I mean, if a pitcher is facing a weak lineup with backups, or hitters going against someone who really shouldn't be there, it's such a sneaky way of making the most of the waiver wire. After that, we do our mental health moment where we talk about stress and anxiety and how we deal with them. So that's today's show. I hope you like it. And a reminder that, just like always, this is presented by PitcherList and the PitcherList Podcast Network. But first, a quick word.
Welcome back, fantasy friends. It's your old pal Mike Carter here, Breakfast with the Beats and Dave Funnel. Dave, this is episode 11, and episode 11 got off to an interesting start. I'm currently outside of Chicago, and it's Thursday night because I have to go out of town for the next couple of days to help my son get back from Boy Scout camp in rural Michigan. And so Dave, being the wonderful Canadian friend that he is, loyal, kind, very giving, generous of his time, decided we could record on Thursday night. So I went to my office where I have been recording because it's quiet and there's nobody here. There are no teenage children running through my house, opening bags, leaving stuff laying around, whatever it might be. And I get to my office and we started talking, and 2.5 minutes into the recording, the power went out. Now, I know that many of you know where I live, and we've had, been besieged by storms the last week or two, but there's no storm here. Actually, if you're watching this on the YouTube channel, you can see that the eye of God is shining down behind me. I have the blinds closed because it's a bright, sunny day, and it's about 70 degrees here after dinner on Thursday night. So I have no idea what caused the power outage. I hope it doesn't happen again, especially if we're almost done with the show, Dave. But it is not coffee this morning, or coffee at all, because it's not morning. It's not breakfast time. We're recording after dinner, so you'll be hearing this on Sunday, and just know that it was recorded a couple of days prior. But we've got a packed show for you, as usual. We're going to talk a little bit about some beat writer roundup articles that we found, talk about some teams' playoff chances now that they have some injured players back. Dave's going to report back to us on some players that have been hurt in the last week or two and injuries that have decimated both pitching rotations and starting lineups across both the American and the National League. And we, of course, will end with our mental health minute, in which we talk a little bit about how we handle things like anxiety. And men, as we know, oftentimes do not talk about the things that are going on in their inner world. And one of those is anxiety. And anxiety is really apparent in the world today around us, probably more than any other time that I can think of in the 31 years that I've been working in mental health. But we'll talk about that later. In the meantime, Dave, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, too. I think it was the baseball gods coming after us, because we just started talking about and take one about these injuries coming. And then right then and there, the power went out. So if that's an omen to what's happening in our leagues now or in the future, it might be. I don't know. But we need to tread lightly here with the baseball gods and make sure that they don't strike us down again.
We're just going to enter into this episode real quietly.
Yeah, I think so.
We'll just enter this one really quietly and try not to anger anyone else, whether it be the baseball gods or our families, whatever it might be. But happy Thursday to you, Dave. I know you work tomorrow. I do not. So I'm looking forward to that. And wanted to talk to you a little bit before we get into the crux of our show today. The leadoff question that I had for you was, who's a hot free agent that you have your eye on this weekend for Fab? I have a couple of guys. I don't know how hot they are, but I have a couple of guys that I want to share with you too, but I'm going to turn the floor over to you. Who are a couple of guys that you're interested in this weekend?
Oh, so I've got one hitter and one pitcher. One, the hitter is Paul Goldschmidt. In the deepest of leagues, he might be already taken. But if you're in a shallow league right now, or maybe even a mid league, I think there's something there that you could actually use as your corner infielder. He's been on fire as of late, batting over 300. And he's got more home runs now than he did all of last year. He's crushing home runs, and he's crushing breaking pitches as well, something he didn't do last year. He's hitting 347 against them. He started off as a lefty platoon, but there really isn't anything different from last year. He's just keeping it simple. But there was a little thing, an article that I read. Oh, I wish I remembered who, but he's attacking pitches out. He's getting out in front of pitches more. So it's helping him pull the ball when he pulls it, get a little bit more power. But he's been on fire as of late. He's been steady for them, especially since Aaron Judge has been gone. And if you need some help at the corner, he's going to play almost every day. He's an excellent hitter. He won't run like he used to, but he's an excellent hitter at the plate with some good patience. I'd be adding him.
Just to piggyback off what you said, Dave, over the course of the last, you know, 2 weeks of where it's June 18th, so I guess 18 days in June, he is hitting 382 with 5 home runs and 17 RBIs. And to your point, he's got 11 home runs this year when last year he had 10. And when you look at some of the underlying metrics of it to see if it's real, it does appear that it is. You know, he has the highest pull air percentage of his career as well. It's over 21%. And so he's maybe selling out a little bit more for power, but it's working for him right now. The OBP is at 368. The slug is 560. OPS is 928 for a 38-year-old first base. I agree with you. Ride it while it's hot if you can, especially with the injuries that are just mounting at corner infield. You know, I know a lot of people lost Jose Ramirez like I did this past week. A lot of people also lost Vinny Pasquantino, who's been underperforming but still a starter in most leagues, right, that we play in. So getting a guy like Goldschmidt could really make a difference for you, especially in the short term. Who's your other guy that you had, Dave?
So this is more of a deep league play. He's a guy that I really liked coming off of injury, which is, you know, rare for me, someone who's injured that I'm all over. But I like Hurston Waldrop.
Oh, God.
I do.
Oh, God.
Last year, his splitter was devastating. It was a 150 batting average against and a 162 expected batting average. And he's got a nice curve as well. And he just couldn't be consistent last year, especially with the fastball. It didn't really have a ride last year. And he just came back from loose body surgery, and he got optioned immediately to the minors. But he's a guy that could come up. He could be their fifth starter. And I think he's someone that they might need down the stretch. So take a chance on Waldrop. I don't know how long he's going to stay in the minors, but you could probably get him for a dollar or two right now. Mm-hmm. And if you have a spot for the next couple of weeks, give it a shot to see if he gets called.
Well, looking at their rotation, you could see where they might be able to use him, right? So right now their rotation is Chris Sale, J.R. Richie, Martin Perez, Bryce Elder, and Grant Holmes. That's not exactly lighting the world on fire there for a team that's in first place. I mean, granted, they have a vaunted bullpen, which we've talked about, and the bullpen has been outstanding, especially the back end of that bullpen. But they really could use a boost in their starting rotation. I don't know if anybody's heard much about Spencer Schwellenbach. I don't know if you've heard anything about him. I know I thought I had heard a rumor that he was getting ready to throw, but with Strider out now with elbow inflammation and, you know, guys like A.J. Smith-Shawver who had Tommy John, you're going to have a problem in that rotation. And maybe Waldrop would be a guy that you could pick up cheaply and could pay some dividends for you.
For clarity, Schwellenbach started playing catch about a month ago, but there hasn't really been much about what he's been doing since. I know he's going to be out through the All-Star break. He hasn't really been healing as well as they had thought, but I think he'll be back at some point this year, but it could be one of those things where they just want to see if he can be healthy going next year.
Yeah, I think those are both really good spec plays. For me, I suggested Kyle Teal. who should be coming off the IL this weekend. Now, he has not played at all for the White Sox this year. And even though the White Sox have played better than expectations, the catcher position for them has been a bit of a black hole, especially offensively, between the timeshare of Drew Romo and Edgar Carroll. Although Carroll is showing some signs of coming around.
Yeah.
You know, he's up to 196. So if he hit my weight, he could be a multimillionaire. but the story here is that Teal should be coming back. He's on a rehab assignment. It all really just depends on how long of a time he really needs, but it looks like he will be back at the end of the weekend, maybe to start the next series on Monday, and they really do need him. Teal really put together a nice year last year in just about a half a season where he had 8 home runs and hit about 270. And so if you're in a two-catcher league, I wouldn't drop your catcher that you have right now if you're in a mono-catcher league. But in a two-catcher league, I think Teal is going to get the bulk of that playing time for the White Sox. Mm-hmm. And it's somebody that should be available on a lot of waiver wires, especially in leagues if you're not in super deep, like dynasty formats. Teal could be available. And the other guy that I have some interest in, just from a actually from a pure speed perspective, the Brewers did something kind of interesting this week and called up Cooper Pratt. And Cooper Pratt was a guy that they had signed to a long-term extension in spring training, so we knew that this could be coming. But they've gotten nothing from Joey Ortiz offensively. And Pat Murphy just said right off the bat when Pratt got here, he's going to play shortstop for us every day. And so Joey Ortiz is going to shift over to third base and be in what looks to be a timeshare with David Hamilton. David Hamilton, we know, won't do much for you other than steal bases when he plays. But the Brewers are that team that gets every ounce that they can out of their spare players. And so look for a timeshare there between Ortiz and Hamilton. And Pratt is going to steal bases when he gets on. If you look at his minor league numbers, he had last year in 121 games, he had 31 stolen bases. Batting average is not going to be a huge comp for you, a huge help for you, I should say. And he's not going to hit for a lot of power. But this is a developing guy who can steal some bases. And if you're like me, you probably need a little bit of help in the stolen base game. So with Dave, it was Paul Goldschmidt and Hurston Waldrop. And for me, it was Kyle Teal and Cooper Pratt. Dave, we're going to shift to our beat writer roundup. And I found three articles this week. People who are listening, I want to let you know, I actually did my part this week and didn't just show up to the show. I actually put together the layout for the show, the menu, the plan that we're eating from today. So, Dave, the first article that I found was something that I was really interested in because people had kind of buried the Astros earlier this season, and I was kind of one of them. They looked really bad even before they had all these injuries. But Brian McTaggart wrote a piece this week about three key Astros to watch coming back from the injured list, and I wanted to talk to you a little bit about those three guys. The guys that he mentioned in the article are all back. Hunter Brown, Josh Hader, and Jeremy Pena have all been back. And the Astros are surging a little bit, aren't they?
Yeah. So the article is called Now Off IL. These three players can help Astros make return to postseason. And like you said, the three players mentioned here, they're some of the best players. And they're players that could probably help you in fantasy and mm-hmm. should be helping you. So he starts talking first about Hunter Brown coming back, and he talked about his first start back. It took him a while to get settled in, but after a while, he kind of looked like vintage Hunter Brown. He was able to mix in his sinker and had a 96-mile-per-hour fastball, which was great. Brown said after the game that his fastball command was off, but it was just because he was a little rusty. I think this is a huge, huge comeback for them to have him back here because they've needed pitching all year long. Anytime we've seen them take one step forward, especially in pitching, it's been two steps back with injuries or setbacks or even just pitchers not performing the way that they should. Hunter Brown coming back is huge for them. And I think in fantasy, you have to be happy that he's back. If you can trade for him, I think you might be paying full price right now. You might be able to get a slight discount if people, you know, want to look at what he did in this past game and maybe think that he might not be back yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this is huge for, obviously, for Houston. And in fantasy, I'd be putting him in my lineups anywhere I had him.
Mm-hmm. Well, the AL West is a very weak division this year, isn't it? I mean, the AL in general, really, if we look at it, is not super dominant. I mean, there's a bunch of teams that are all within 500. The Yankees and the Rays have been outstanding, but other teams have been fairly mediocre. But in that AL West, the Mariners lead with a 39-37 record right now. And the Astros are in fourth place, but they're only four games behind at 35-41. So I really feel like inserting Pena back into that lineup at the top where they have him. They also got Yainer Diaz back this week as well, which is a little bit under the radar compared to these other guys, but getting healthy at a good time. And then their pitching staff sort of intrigues me a little bit. I'm not saying that it's great, but getting Brown back at the top of that rotation and getting Hader back, who now has three saves since last Friday, since he's returned, with Tetsuya Imai and Spencer Arrighetti, who I continue to like. I know that there's a lot of people out there that are down on him right now. He's not had the results that we would really like. I don't think Teng is very good, but Peter Lambert has been decent for them as well. But they're also getting ready at some point this summer, I believe, Dave, to re-entertain having Ronel Blanco, Christian Javier. I know Hayden Wesneski had Tommy John surgery, but that was in May of 25. So he's on the comeback trail as well. It's very possible that they could get some help there in that rotation and make a really interesting race out of this in the AL West.
Yeah, and the one, there that I think will come back first will be Christian Javier. I think he's on a rehab right now, or he's about to start one. And doing that, I think, will help K-Y Tang, I think that's how you pronounce it. Mm-hmm. He's been pitching well out of the bullpen, but he does look pretty tired right now. They've been having to use him and stretch him out. So putting him back in the bullpen for, you know, long relief, I think that's going to help them out in the long run. I also love having Hader back because I think that gives Brian Abreu a chance to take a step back. I don't know if he has the mentality to be a closer, and I wonder mm-hmm. if that's, you know, what was keeping him from taking that next step forward. I think it might be the mentality, though he does have a lot of wear and tear. Like he's been through it for the last couple of years. They've used him a lot. But yes. Getting Hader back in there, having Abreu take a step back, you've seen it with Abreu lately. He's pitched really, really well. And now that Hader can go on back-to-back games, which he just did just the other day, I think, that's just another way, another strength that they're going to have so that the rest of the bullpen can maybe take it easy for a little bit and be ready for the stretch.
Yeah, it could be a really interesting situation there, depending on how this plays out over the next few weeks. Definitely a team to watch. Shifting gears to our next article, was by Matthew Ritchie. It was talking about Jacob Lotz, who is the closer for the Rangers. And Dave, you and I had talked about him going a ways back, if you recall, when I was getting ready to do the Tout Wars mixed auction draft in New York City in March. We had talked about some spec plays at the pitcher position and that I was going to try in the reserve rounds to load up on pitchers that I felt had upside, even though I didn't know exactly what their role was going to be. And the guy that you and I had both talked about was Jacob Lotz. And he has taken that closer role in Texas and really run with it, hasn't he?
He has, but the journey to get there was a little bit odd because I think when we were talking about him, he was going to be at the back end of the rotation. But he, and as outlined here in this article, actually it was by Matthew Ritchie. It's called How Jacob Lotz Became the Rangers' Unlikely Dominant Closer. This article talks about how he got knocked out of the rotation for Kumar Rocker. Mm-hmm. And I love the mentality that he spoke about here, that Lotz just walked right down to the manager and said, listen, put me in some high leverage relief roles. That's a great mentality. I didn't mm-hmm. win this, but let me help you with this. And, you know, too often we see in baseball these days, players, you know, unwilling to try a new position or mm-hmm. to do something over here. This was really great to see somebody take on that new challenge. And he's been thriving with it. He's been great against lefties and righties. He's got a 163 batting average against lefties and a .079 batting average against righties. In June, he's given up just four base runners, so two hits and two walks. He's been throwing a fastball that is it says here the four-seamer is the third highest in baseball in pitcher run value, just behind Ohtani and Schlittler. So he's been on fire all year. He's been someone that they've needed to get out of jams and get, you know, those saves at the end of the game. He's been outstanding, and I'm sure you've been loving it on your teams.
Yeah, you know, I think the part that I find interesting is that he has learned, I think, he keeps it really simple against lefties. And he's got a repertoire of four different pitches that he uses against right-handers. But against lefties, he kind of hit on the formula last year, which made me interested in him, which was that he's going to throw fastballs and sliders to left-handed hitters. And that's how he's going to really attack them. But to right-handers, he throws the slider quite a bit less, about, you know, half the time to those guys, and he's throwing the changeup and the curveball more. And that mix is really working well for him. He's not a high velocity guy, but he knows where to put that fastball. His location is fantastic. It almost looks like it's rising when he throws it. So even though his average velocity is only about 94.5, it looks a lot harder than what it is when it's coming at you and it looks like it's going, you know, up. And so he's done a really nice job for them. I did not anticipate that he was going to be the closer when I took him in the reserve round. I thought of him as an extra starter who might get some run there. But the fact that he's closing and I have him paired with Joan Duran on my Tout Wars team, I'm doing very well in saves. Unfortunately, that's the only place that I'm doing well in Tout. We're fighting back. We're getting there. But my offense was so stagnant. That was the league that I was telling you about where I had Jackson Merrill and Fernando Tatis, who were like being anchors to my, and literally anchors and like sinking the ship, not anchors and like helping me achieve statistical dominance at all. But they're coming around. But Lats has been terrific. And it goes against that just because of the fact that he can get both lefties and righties out. He is not a loogie guy. He is not a one-out specialist. This is a guy that could be the closer there for a long period of time. So I hope that he continues in that role because it helps me in fantasy. And I'm also rooting for him because he's got a great story.
It's a win-win.
Exactly. Okay, and Dave, the last article that we had is going down over to St. Louis, and the Cardinals have been a bit of a surprise this year. I think most people would agree to that. They're 40-32 at this point. They're five games back of the Brewers. They're 2.5 games up on the Cubs right now, and they've really been doing it with a team that's arriving ahead of schedule. And Will Lechner wrote an article this week about the Cards being ahead of schedule. What did he talk about in that article?
So the article is called The Cardinals Are Contenders in 2026. Now what? And it starts by saying that earlier this week, the Cardinals had a 50.6% chance of making the playoffs via the FanGraphs playoff predictor. And the beauty of it all is that when Chaim Bloom came in as the team president, he said, our top priority will be to build our talent base for the long term. That may mean hard decisions and short-term sacrifices, but to get where we want to go, we can't take shortcuts. When we have to choose between short-term gratification and our bigger goal of contending consistently, we will choose the long-term. So obviously he didn't think, and I don't think anyone else thought, that they would be this far ahead of schedule. But the article also goes into detail about how they need to be careful not to sell too much too soon, simply for the fact that it's going to hurt the fan base and it could hurt the momentum of these players. And it goes specifically talking about Jordan Walker. It's like he finally breaks through. And what do you guys do as a team? You sell everything and wait for next year. Well, right. What about now? The thing is, they have some interesting players that, can either be free agents or, you know, there's options coming up. And one of which is Dustin May, who's been outstanding as of late.
He's been terrific.
Yeah. But when you look at it on paper, everything screams that you need to sell this guy now and get what you can, because he's going to benefit on a contender, not here. I'm torn as to what they should do. I kind of lean on the side that they should sell, simply because I know they're 40-32 right now, but I don't think they're catching Milwaukee.
No.
I think the Cubs have to be better than this. I don't think they're this bad. They have so many players that should be better than they are.
Yeah.
The Pirates are sneaky good if they can stay healthy. And the Reds right now are getting healthy. I really want them to go for it because they are really a feel-good story for this year. But I think the smart move is to sell.
Well, it's interesting when you talk about selling with this team, because when you look at the average age, the oldest guy in the starting lineup right now is Lars Nootbaar, who is 28. And so they do have some pieces there that would be intriguing to teams that are contending. And I think it might actually come more from their bullpen. They could trade Nootbaar if they don't feel like he's part of their future. But they have Weatherholt and Burleson and Herrera. They're not going to trade any of those guys. They pulled up Blaze Jordan, who looks like he's going to be a pretty good player. Jimmy Crooks is getting some time behind the plate. The place where they might be able to make some hay and making some trades, May would be a good candidate, I think, to trade and especially to sell high. And I could see him going earlier than the deadline just because the Cardinals look to sell high on him because he's been really good. He had 9 strikeouts in his last game. He's showing that swing and miss stuff that we've been kind of waiting for years, and he's showing it right now. So maybe he would be someone that they would sell. Maybe they would sell Andre Pallante, who's also got 8 wins. He's helping my worst team right now, even though he doesn't help you a lot with strikeouts. But, you know, Kyle Leahy, is somebody going to be interested in him? But if you look at the bullpen, Riley O'Brien would have a market. Jojo Romero would have a market. Maybe even Ryan Stanek would have a market. So there's definitely some pieces there that they could move and get some more prospects. But I'm with you on that. I don't think that they're going to sell from any of the guys that they have that are starters right now. It's a young team that looks to be up and coming. They obviously need a little bit of help with their pitching. Michael McGreevy has been great, even though maybe he might be a little out over his skis. I'm not sure. I haven't done a real deep dive on him. But the Cardinals are a really intriguing team. To your point, they're not going to catch the Brewers. I don't know that anybody in the division is going to. But they could be a strong wild card team, even if they just stay put with what they have. I think the smart move is what you said, though. The smart move is to sell the pieces that you have that might have some value to a team that's contending and allow you to start adding more pieces to the puzzle. With that, we're going to take our first ad break, and we will be back in one moment. All right, Dave, we want to talk a little bit about some of the chaos that's going on, and everyone's feeling this who plays fantasy baseball. At one point last week, I turned to my family who was sitting in the living room with me, and I said, I think I'm going to quit playing fantasy baseball, and they just laughed at me because they knew that I wasn't serious. But we have some pretty serious problems for some of the teams here in the major leagues, and I wanted to get your take and discuss with you 3 different rotations and 3 different lineups that really are hurting right now, and give us some little injury updates on those where we can. The first one we brought up a couple of minutes ago in the show, and that's the Chicago Cubs and their pitching rotation. I don't know of any team that has had more starting pitching injuries than what the Cubs have had. And nothing necessarily super serious, but really nagging, irritating type of injuries, right? You know, Matthew Boyd's playing with his kids and tears his meniscus. Edward Cabrera seems to do something every other start to himself. But right now, their current rotation is Shota Imanaga, who has whiplash from giving up too many home runs, Edward Cabrera, Javier Assad, who's been actually pretty good the last couple times he's been out, Ben Brown, who, you know, is my secret crush for many, many years, and Colin Ray, who is a fifth starter at best on a probably on a bad team. I mean, on this team, he has to be their fifth starter because they don't have any other options. But they've got several guys that are in various stages of return as well. Boyd, who I mentioned, Justin Steele is starting to build up some stamina and strength and looks like he might be back maybe in August, if we're being optimistic, and Jameson Taillon. What do you think about this rotation, and what are you hearing about those injuries on those guys?
What I think about this rotation is I just ate and my stomach is starting to turn because it's terrible. It's terrible, but it's so unfortunate because it's just one injury after another. Matthew Boyd should be back soon. He's starting a rehab this weekend after a shoulder setback. And my guess is that it's just a one and done. I think if he can show that his shoulder is going to be fine, he can come right back. Justin Steele, he's had a setback or two this year, and he's just started to throw plyo balls. He's not even yet throwing a baseball.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is that, and they didn't really expect him to be back for much of the season. My guess would be sometime in early September, just with the hope that they're in contention and that he can be built up to help them in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Edward Cabrera, who we all thought was going to be this stud. And my God, he had this elbow injury last year, came back after 2 weeks from a sprained elbow, came back, looked okay. Cubs in the offseason said, you know what? We need this guy. So they trade for him. And he's been awful this year. And I don't know if he's playing through still that injury from last year, or it's just getting adjusted to Chicago right now. It's been a disaster. I think this is definitely a rotation that you can pick on in fantasy. I think if you see them coming up, that that your players are playing them, I think you need to start them. And I think you could even look on the waiver wire as well, just to see if they're going to be playing against these pitchers who are really, really struggling. I don't like this rotation at all.
I like Ben Brown a lot.
I do. And he's been great. I do like Ben Brown. I do.
But to your point, they don't have an ace. And, you know, Edward Cabrera, I'm going to say this, and I'll take flack for it, and that's fine. Stuff is really important, and I get that or whatever. But Edward Cabrera is 28. He's been in the league for 6 seasons. He's 29-33 with a 4.22 ERA with a 1.32 whip. Maybe that's just what he is. Maybe there is no next level. Yeah, he throws real hard. He gets a lot of chase. Cool. He's also walking guys and giving up hits at a furious pace. And so maybe that's just what he is. And the same thing with Shota. I mean, I know a lot of people in fantasy baseball talk about Shota and, you know, how good he is and all this other stuff. And he is, but he's not an ace. He's a third starter on a team that's decent, right? And in the playoffs, do you want him pitching game one?
No, because he can't not give up home runs.
No. And so here's the problem that I see on their team is that, yes, Ben Brown's been great, and they'll get Boyd back, and Boyd's good, and maybe they'll get Steele back, and Tyone is a four. They lack that front-end guy. And even if they had Cade Horton is not an ace. I'm sorry. He's just not. He's good, very good, but they don't have that guy that they need that they can give the ball to in game one and say, here, go get him. They're going to try to piecemeal their way through it. And that's why when I talk about the Cubs, I will say that to my friends that are Cubs fans. I don't think that they're super serious about winning, despite the fact that they have a really high payroll. What they really like to do is have fans come out and see Dansby Swanson and see PCA and see Seiya Suzuki and see Ian Happ. Those guys are all phenomenal players. Bregman, they spent a lot of money on guys that fans can come out and see every day. They did not address their pitching in a good enough fashion to be able to be a World Series type of contender. And they're really struggling because of that. And I don't see them having the assets to be able to go out and get a frontline starter. There's a lot of Cubs fans and a lot of fans in general who will say, yeah, things would look a lot better if we had Scooble. Yeah. For sure. How are you going to get him? What are you going to give Detroit? Detroit doesn't want Kevin Alcantara. Kevin Alcantara stinks. He does. He's just not very good. So where are your top prospects? Are you going to trade your top prospects for 2 months of Scooble? Maybe they do, but I don't think that they feel that pressured because I don't think that they're super serious about being a team that's – they want to contend. They want to make the playoffs. Sure, everybody does. But if they were serious about that, they wouldn't have this pitching staff.
Not just that. The guys that they did sign aren't doing anything. Like Nico Horner, what has happened to you?
He's been
Dansby Swanson can't do anything this year. It's been an unbelievable drop this year. And I think they will turn it around. But it's really frustrating right now if you're rostering some of these guys.
Yeah.
For what it's worth.
Nico Horner is hitting .031 on off-speed pitches in 2026. How is that even possible? He's 1-for-34.
And he's one of the best contact hitters in baseball.
It's weird. It's weird. Yeah. Strange. Well, I'm not going to sit here and trash the Cubs, because now we're going to trash somebody else instead. Let's move on to another team to just get after. And that team is the Kansas City Royals. Their current rotation right now is Michael Wacha, Luender Avila, Noah Cameron, who's actually been a saving grace for me in a couple of squads, and Stephen Kolek, who's actually been very good at certain points as well. In various stages of return right now, Chris Bubich, who's got an elbow issue and a shoulder issue, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Seth Lugo, who took a line drive off the head from Brandon Nimmo the other night. And Cole Reagans, who's got an elbow impingement and seems like one step up and two steps back. What are you seeing there, Dave, in terms of those guys coming back? Because they could really use a boost there, couldn't they?
They really could, because what they have right now, Wacha, Avila, Cameron, and Kolek, they do the job, but there's not much there. To me, it's like doing groceries at the dollar store. It's fine. It does the job, but is it really that good for you? No. You're saving money, and that's about it. As for the guys that they're missing right now, Bubich, he's had setbacks, he's had dead arm, he's had fatigue. He's playing catch after an MRI showed that there was nothing structurally wrong, but it feels a little ominous, as if there's something else there.
Can I ask you a follow-up to Bubich on that? As a guy who covers injuries, and that's your bread and butter, does it ever make you scratch your head when you find out that a guy had an MRI and it shows no structural damage? Like, does it make you wonder, like, sometimes in my mind, just if I'm being honest, I'll think, is this guy just not tough enough to be able to pitch at this level? Like, and Bubich has been successful. He's had success, so he knows what it takes to be able to do that. Do those thoughts ever cross your mind like that?
Not really. To be honest,
it's because you're a good human being and I'm not. That's why.
No. It's more that I just feel that that goes to the pitcher. I'm hurt. You're hurting, right? Yeah. Okay. Let's go see what's there. Okay. Oh, it's just inflammation, or it's just something else. It's not actually anything structurally wrong. Now we know what we can do about it. I think that's the whole base, or at least that's what I think about it. And the fact that the pitcher actually mentioned to the team, you know, I'm not feeling well, I think is actually a step in the right direction, because a lot of pitchers don't do that. A lot of players don't do that. They'll end up playing through injuries. And then the next thing you know, they have setbacks or their performance drops. And next thing you know, they've wasted a whole month. But that's what I think what's going on with Bubich. Reagans is pretty much the same. Multiple setbacks. He got shut down. He's on the 60-day IL, and it kind of feels like surgery is the end game here. He just hasn't been the same this year, and he really hasn't been the same since his rotator cuff injury last year. And then as for Seth Lugo, it was a scary situation. He's on the the 7-day concussion injured list right now. But he did throw a bullpen, so I think he's going to be okay. But the Royals, this feels like a disastrous season for them. Nothing has worked. You bring in the fences and the offense struggles. You build with some pitching, and they can't stay healthy. It's been one setback after another for everyone. I'd be picking on this this rotation over the next couple weeks. They're at Tampa, at the White Sox, at home to Tampa, and versus the Phillies. So those are teams that I would be looking at via free agency, just to see if, you know, if I have an open spot to play with, maybe look at those teams and see if I can pick somebody up and see if they do well.
The Royals did announce this evening, Dave, that Lugo is going to start tomorrow. So he is coming off the concussion IL tomorrow, which is really good news. He never lost consciousness with that, but boy, he took a line shot off the forehead that was pretty wild.
He took it like a champ. It was Brandon Nimmo who came over and made sure he was okay, but he just got up.
Yeah. I think it's just the adrenaline in that situation. That ball bounded in the right field and was caught on two outs by the right fielder. It was crazy. Glad he's okay. But to your point, you know, the Royals are 30-45 and really don't seem like they're going much of anywhere. They lost Vinny Pasquantino, as we talked about earlier, and they're going to play Caglione at first base. I think it looks like that he's going to get the bulk of the time at first base, but they're tinkering with the lineup now with Michael Garcia getting hurt and being out the last couple of days. They were leading off Carter Jensen. Well, he didn't get a combo meal the other night. He did hit a home run in RBI, yeah, and scored in a stolen base, which was good for a couple of my fantasy teams. Or slowly but surely, these guys are starting to hit a little bit. But good news on Lugo coming back. I have Bubic in a couple places too, but I'm probably going to have to look at moving on from him if he's not going to be back soon. And, Dave, the last team that we wanted to talk about with the rotation, and somewhere Torres is going to sit up and scream a guttural scream from the deep caverns of his belly, is the Los Angeles Angels. Their current rotation, maybe you want to take a sip of water before you listen to this to make you not be sick. Jose Soriano, Walbert Urena, Reed Detmers, and Sam Aldegari. That's their rotation. Now, I think that they also did call up Ryan Johnson to start either – I don't know if he was starting tonight or tomorrow – he's one of their prospects. I don't know if he's any good. He came up earlier and got shelled. He's starting tonight against the Athletics. So he's their fifth starter. So they go Soriano, Urania, Detmers, and Aldegari. What are we doing here? Well, I mean, what is even the plan here?
I think you and I talking like this and Torres last week, we feel like all Angels fans with an Artie Moreno run team. It's just, what is the plan here? What are you doing? Why are you doing this? There's no rationale. And I know they've had some injuries. I mean, Kikuchi getting injured wasn't part of the plan. Mm-hmm. Grayson Rodriguez getting injured probably should have been part of the plan. but it is an unmitigated disaster. Jose Soriano was pitching out of his mind this year, but he's coming down to earth. They've done something with Reed Detmers, so ride it as long as you can, but he might get traded.
Sure.
So I don't know. I really don't know. And I'd love to talk to Angels fans and see what they think. But as an outsider, I'm just flabbergasted at what they do. Next 2 weeks, they play Sacramento, they're at Seattle versus Boston and at Texas. So if you have any of those players or want to grab some, it would be good, good 1 week ads, I think.
Talking about Soriano, you know, he got off to the great start and he's 8-4 right now with a 2.79 ERA and a 1.23 whip. And the ERA remains good this month, but the whip is up to 160, which is really way too high for you to be able to roster. And it's really the walk rate that's hurting him. I mean, he's got an 11.7% walk rate right now, but he doesn't give up many hits historically, so he's able to work around that. But when he starts giving up hits and that normalizes a little bit and he's given up that many walks, then you've got a little bit of a problem. So Soriano, I'm in kind of a wait-and-see mode. And the interesting thing about Urania is that he's kind of the same guy. He's really similar to Jose Soriano when you put them together and look at him. You know, they kind of go about things the same way. They throw this exploding sinker that is, you know, got a high velocity. He's also got an excessively high walk rate. He does not have the strikeout rate that Soriano does, but he's a similar type of guy. But he too has been struggling. It seems like maybe the league is starting to figure him out a little bit. And the walks are kind of creeping up on him a little bit too. So those are interesting guys to watch. I do have Aldegari in a dynasty league that I'm in. So I'm hoping that he's going to be okay. And I also have Tyler Brumner in the same one. And I'm hoping that he will get a call up at some point. So I need those guys. That's the dynasty league that I'm in. I was telling you about before, is 24 teams with 60 man rosters. And so There is an insane level of depth where people are like knocking themselves over to, you know, try to bid on David Fry. You know, it's just things just get a little bit crazy there, but it's fun. You got me into that and it's fun.
Yeah. Dynasty can be pretty fun. And especially if you pick the right guys when they're just sitting there, that's the best. It's the best feeling.
Yeah. I'm trying. We'll see that league's kind of up in the air, but I'm in seventh right there right now. So that's not too bad.
Yeah. You're in it.
So let's switch to lineups and talk a little bit about some decimated lineups. And no conversation about decimated lineups in MLB would be complete without a talk about our lovely Cleveland Guardians, who've lost Chase DeLauder, Angel Martinez, and Jose Ramirez to the IL this week. Last night's lineup had featured Brian Rocchio hitting number three, Rhys Hoskins was hitting cleanup, and Daniel Schneeman was hitting number five. They had somebody named Petey Halpin, which sounds like a made up like character, like from a superhero movie, doesn't it? Mm. Like little Petey Halpin who lives down their street. No offense to Petey Halpin. I'm sure he's a great person, but he was playing center field. They clearly have a next man up attitude in Cleveland. What do you think? This team, we should also point out, is 40-35 and leading the American League Central at this point. And they also beat the Brewers today 4-2.
It somehow, some way. I mean, I benched Parker Messick today. That was a great decision.
Oops.
But, yeah. Wasn't it in Milwaukee too? I think it's just,
it was. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I left this team out for dead after DeLauder, Angel Martinez, and Jose Ramirez all got injured. I think it was in the same game. And it's just, they're all fractures too. So they're bones that need to heal. They're not short-term injuries at all either. So these guys are going to be out for a while. I still want to leave them out for dead. Sorry, Dave McDonald, but it's not looking good. And there's no fear in this lineup right now. I like Manzardo. I think he's got potential, but I don't think he's there just yet. They do have good prospects, though. I'll give them that. Cooper Engel and Ralphie Velasquez have been really good in the minors. So if they ever want to take the plunge and call these guys up, maybe there's a chance that they can step in and hold the fort down while these three guys get back. But it's going to be tough. Now, the next 2 weeks, they're at the White Sox. They're versus the Mariners, versus Texas, and then home to the White Sox.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can stream some pitchers from these teams, it might be worth giving it a shot. You might
go get Anthony Kay from the White Sox. He's got the Guardians and the Royals coming up this week. Two steps.
Yeah, it might be a good stream start there, and you might get some good totals for the week.
Yeah, I think Cleveland's always kind of an interesting story because they seem to find a way to win. Do you have any interest in – they called up Khalil Watson and when they put DeLauder on the IL. Do you have any interest in him at all in a deep league?
Khalil Watson? Not really. I think he's been up before, hasn't he? Isn't he like a retread from the past?
No. I think this is his first – step up, I believe. Oh, no, that's not true.
Then I'm thinking of a different Khalil. My mistake.
No, he's got a little bit of a speed power combo that I thought was maybe intriguing. He was hitting 250 in AAA this year, with 16 home runs, 61 RBIs, and 17 steals. So as a 22-year-old, I thought that might be kind of impressive. I don't know if he can carry that over. And to answer your question about him being in the major leagues, I believe this is his debut, that he debuted last night. I think that was his first game.
No, you're absolutely right. As I look it up, I was thinking of someone else. I don't even know who I was thinking of.
I bet you were thinking of Khalil Green, the old shortstop.
Wasn't there a guy on like the Marlins a while back? I don't know. But I was obviously thinking of the wrong guy. To be fair, I'd have to look into him. But honestly, if they call someone up and they're going to be starting them, I'd have interest in them. Well, in mono leagues for sure. But even in the deepest of leagues, whoever they call, if they catch on, they're going to play for the next month. So anyone that they can put into this lineup, if they hit they're going to be playing for the next month. So I definitely would have some interest. I'd have to dig deeper into his profile to make sure I really like the guy.
But, yeah.
I'd be bidding on any Guardians hitter right now that will be playing.
It's just such an interesting concept because they always figure it out. They always figure out a way to do it. Doesn't matter who's managing. It doesn't matter who's pitching or hitting. They just figure it out. You know, the Sox are right on their heels at half a game back, but they've struggled with the Yankees. They're currently tied 1-1. Oh, Dave, dramatic pause here as well. I have to issue you congratulations. Canada won in the World Cup today.
Oh, good. It was 3-0 when I saw it.
They won 6-0 over Qatar. So you guys are in business, man.
Yeah, that's looking good because they tied.
I like that. I like that for you guys. That's great. Congratulations. Okay, let's shift away from the Guardians to a team that's even a little more interesting than what they are, and that's the Yankees. The Yankees outfield has really been decimated by injury here over the last few weeks. Obviously, they lost Aaron Judge to the rib injury. I want to ask you about him and get an update on him. They also lost Trent Grisham to the IL with a hamstring strain. They activated Jason Dominguez in that process as well, although he missed a game on Tuesday with a slight injury because he had a tooth pulled, I believe it was. I read that that's what happened with him. So right now, the Yankees are starting an outfield of Cody Bellinger in left, Spencer Jones in center, hit a mammoth home run last night against my beloved White Sox, and Cody Bellinger in left, I'm sorry, Spencer Jones in center, and then in right field was Jason Dominguez. What do you think about this outfield, and what are you hearing about Judge and his return?
Just a quick thing, just so anyone yelling at home right now is saying, Dave, you're talking about the same guy. Yes, Khalil Watson was on the Marlins a while back. So I was thinking of him, but...
He got moved in that. That's right.
Yeah. My mistake.
Anyways, my fault. I should know that. My apologies to those of you listening.
You need to be more up to date with your Guardians Marlins trade. as for the Yankees, I think the outfield really is a mess right now. Judge might not be back for a while, if at all, this year. He's not getting reevaluated for another month. And from there, they might not see enough healing, or they might not say he's cleared to do much of anything. We don't know. And that's kind of a scary proposition right now for a team that needs some offense. Grisham with a moderate hamstring strain, typically 4 to 8 weeks. It's not the mild sort. Like you said, right now there's Bellinger, Spencer Jones, and Dominguez. You're counting on two rookies. And if either of those rookies can't keep up to pace or do what they need to do, it's going to be rough. They're lucky that they have Jose Caballero right now playing out of his mind and playing anywhere they ask him to. But I don't know how long any of this can last. They're obviously, I think, going to be a candidate to make a trade before the deadline to get an outfielder, get some depth there. I'd ride it while you can now, but it's tough. And this offense, they can hit in spurts, but there are some nights when they don't. Next 2 weeks, they're at the Tigers, at the Red Sox, at home to the Tigers, and at home to Minnesota. So that's not too bad of a 2 weeks for them.
I'm really looking forward to seeing Dominguez and Jones get an extended run. I mean, there's been a lot of things written. Anytime a guy is in New York, we know that they're going to face an unfair share of criticism just because of the way that the press is there and the way that the fans are. They're very demanding, which I also admire in a way. But it's going to be really kind of fun to watch and see how those guys respond to the bright lights and big city atmosphere of New York City. To finish up our conversation, the Colorado Rockies have a situation brewing in their outfield as well, where they have a serious roster crunch that's about to hit them. They're going to get Mickey Moniak, Brenton Doyle, who's a Gold Glove winner. I mean, I know people look at him as a hitter and say, oh, he's not that great. But when you got a guy who's won a Gold Glove not once but twice playing center field and that guy's coming back, that guy's going to play. So Brenton Doyle, Mickey Moniak, and Jordan Beck are all in various stages of return, but they've really turned in the last couple of months to guys like Sterling Thompson, Cole Kerrig, Cal Quiros, TJ Rumfield. They've all played well. What do you think is going to happen here, Dave?
Well, they've got Moniak is actually starting a a rehab assignment, might be even today. Oh, and chances are he's going to be back at some point next week. I don't think it's going to be much of a rehab assignment. I think they're going to come and rush, get him back in that lineup. Brenton Doyle just started swinging recently, but there's no real timetable yet. And Jordan Beck with a hamstring strain, I guess within a few weeks possibly, but you never know. Looking at these guys, I think it's an interesting situation. I think a lot of these players are from the old regime, not the new regime, which makes me think that most, if not all of them, might get traded. I think we'll see Moniak actually staying, though. He's been really, really good in Colorado, and he might be someone that they could not necessarily build the franchise around, but showcase and highlight him because he's been really good for them. But the other guys like Brenton Doyle and Jordan Beck, I don't know if I see much of a role for them. In fact, I could almost see a guy like Brenton Doyle getting traded to, like we just talked about, the Yankees. Mm-hmm. Someone like they could use an outfielder. They could use some defensive help. And if one of those rookies doesn't play well, you've got Brenton Doyle for cheap. He'd be a nice pickup for them in the meantime while they wait for Judge to come back. So, yeah, I could see Doyle and Beck actually moving on just because they weren't guys that this new regime necessarily picked to be in place, whereas Moniak has been a stud for them.
It's fascinating because, you know, we always can count on the Rockies to get things wrong, but they're getting a lot of things right now, it seems like. You know, they've really worked hard on their pitching programming and how they want to pitch guys when they're in Denver, and we know that that's a different atmosphere than any other park in the major leagues ever, really, when you think about it. But they've got some players there that are pretty good. I mean, I think Carey is pretty good. I think Rumfield's actually pretty good. Sterling Thompson was a guy that I had picked up just based on the name, you know, value recognition of him being a high pick, and he's performed actually halfway decently. I agree with you, though. I think that Moniak would be most likely to stay. Moniak is only 28. Hmm. It feels like he's 35. It feels like he's been around forever, but, you know, he was a first-round overall pick by the Phillies, and he didn't pan out there, and he's really hit a nice level in Colorado. Brenton Doyle, I find really interesting as well, because I think he needs a change of scenery. And I've wondered about that too, because I think the White Sox might make some minor trades if they're continuing to stay in this thing. And they've gotten great value out of Tristan Peters playing center field, but he's hitting a little bit over his head. I mean, if you look at the metrics, I don't know that he's going to be able to, you know, really keep that up. He's hitting 40 points over his XBA, and there's not really a lot of power there, although he's been pretty good. I would not mind seeing a situation in which they had acquired a guy like Brenton Doyle to play center field with Peters as a fourth outfielder and continue to run with Antonacci and Brayden Montgomery. The White Sox are currently started in all rookie outfield, folks, and they're contending. So it's pretty exciting times for me, who's been through a lot of thin here in the last few years. Okay, Dave, we're going to take our last ad break here and come back with our mental health minute. We're going to talk a little bit about how we handle anxiety and stress, mostly anxiety. We'll be right back. All right, Dave, the final segment of our show this week. Again, for those of you who might be joining late listening here or maybe missed the first part, we've battled power outages tonight, even though there's no rain. We've talked about Canada winning their first World Cup match this year. Fantastic news for Dave. We've talked about a bunch of different things, our beat writer articles. We've talked about some lineups that are facing some injuries and some roster crunches coming back and some rotations that are struggling as well. But now we're going to shift our focus to the individual struggle and the individual struggle that a lot of people face on a daily basis with their mental health. We know a lot of guys out there that are struggling with these different things, Dave, don't we? And the question that I wanted to ask you tonight was, what do you do when you start to feel those mental health symptoms creep in, where you start to maybe decrease a little bit in your efficacy as a husband, as a teacher, as a father, as a friend in those different roles? How do you handle upticks in anxiety when they come to you?
I'm glad that you put this question in, because it's very important, especially this is Men's Health Awareness Month, I believe, Mental Health Awareness Month. And it's really tough because men don't really talk about what they're feeling inside, and they don't really talk about, you know, feeling less than they should be because mm-hmm. I'm a man. And it's
right.
These are very important things to talk about. And I find the more that you talk about them, the more you feel able and ready to attack these things. As for me, it's hard for me sometimes to understand when or if I am stressed. I actually have to take a step back at times mm-hmm. and say, wow, oh my God, this and this and this happened. Yeah, look at me. I'm feeling it right now. Sometimes there are physical signs of stress. I know for me personally, I get red ears. When mm-hmm. I have red ears and I feel hot on the top of my head, it's almost like a cartoon. It's the steam is coming out. Mm-hmm. But if I ever do feel it, I like to take walks or I like to go somewhere quiet. If it's, you know, in my classroom and there's a lot going on, that might be my cue to go use the bathroom, a nice walk down the hallway and just take a few minutes. As for anxiety, I do get nervous still about certain things. There's, you know, it could be something small. It could be something big. I remember when we first started podcasting here, I was really nervous. I really nervous the first time doing it. I'm a typer. I could type anything. I could have a conversation through typing. But when it comes time to talk, there's so much going on in my head. I want to make sure I say the right thing. I want to make sure I don't, you know, get out the wrong word. And when I'm talking about injuries, I want to make sure that I have the right information, and it can be hard. But when I'm nervous about something, I'll think about it. And one thing that I do to myself, I'll say, you know what, in this many hours, it'll all be over, or I'll be in bed. I'll be somewhere nice, somewhere quiet. And chances are, no matter what I went through, it wasn't as bad as what I was thinking of. But, you know, in the moment, you need to calm yourself down and make yourself understand that you're able and ready to handle whatever you're about to do. And I also read somewhere, too, that if you ever get nervous about, you know, yourself and what you're doing, you know, maybe you're going into like a big area with a lot of people. I read somewhere that most people are usually too busy thinking about themselves and how they're presenting themselves and how they are. They're really not thinking about you. Mm-hmm. And ever since I heard that, it's actually calmed me down. Last night we went to, two nights ago, my son graduated from grade 8 and it was great. And there was a big hall and everyone's walking in. We've got our suits and stuff. And, you know, in the past, I'd always think, oh my God, there's a little stain here, or is my tie straight? But you know what? Thinking about this and remembering, they're all too worried about if their tie is straight or if their dress has a stain. So they're not even thinking about me.
Correct.
And so those are the things that I do to just help myself get over stress and anxiety.
I tell my students all the time, you'll be shocked when you get older at how little people think of you. And not that they don't want to, and not that they have bad thoughts about you, but that they're just so engaged in their own little mini struggle in their brain that they're not even thinking about what you're doing or how you look or what you said. It's very compelling what you said, Dave. And I think the word that I take from what you said is really just being more mindful of the fact that you know that stress and anxiety are going to be part of what goes on, and then choosing different strategies for how you manage that. And I won't belabor the point, because I think we could probably do an entire show on how to handle stress and anxiety. But I think the thing that I've learned most about myself as I've gotten older is that my strategy when I was really anxious, you know, as a teenager and in my early 20s when I was really anxious, was to avoid. So if I knew that there was something unpalatable that I needed to do, I would generally just avoid it or push it off. I would not go to that doctor's appointment that I needed to go to. I would reschedule it. Or if there was something that a conversation that I needed to have with a peer that was about holding me accountable, or I knew that they were going to criticize me, I would put those things off and say, I'll just wait till Monday. But then when you do that, what happens is that builds up the stress more. Yeah. And in the short term, it feels really good to avoid something that causes you stress or anxiety. But in the long term, it's like death by a thousand cuts, right? It just keeps building and mounting, and it creeps in at times when you don't want it to be creeping in. So like, say, for example, you put something off until Monday because today's Thursday, and you put it off till Monday. But then on Friday, when you're cutting the grass, it pops into your brain. On Saturday, when you're out on date night with your wife, it pops up into your brain and it ruins the evening. On Sunday, when you should be paying attention to your kids or doing something fun like that for Father's Day, which is coming up, you're engaged in this negative self spiral and this denial that kind of goes with that. So I think really being mindful of it, like what you're saying and what you said, which I thought was a really great way to do that, but then also limiting those avoidance behaviors and gradually learning how to face anxiety-producing situations. I'm a school principal at a therapeutic day school. There are really stressful things that happen sometimes with kids. We have kids that engage in self-injury, sometimes serious. We have kids that make a lot of comments about hurting themselves or hurting other people. We have situations where parents become agitated or angry with situations or need to talk to me, or they're angry with me or my team about what goes on. And when I was a younger person, I would avoid those situations, or like I said earlier, I'd put them off till Monday. It was really training myself to face those anxiety-inducing situations a little bit at a time, with like a gradual exposure type of idea of the more I'm exposed to it, the less freaked out I am about having that conversation. That at the end of the day, what I end up kind of realizing is that I don't really need to have a lot of emotions when it comes to things like information. I'm just giving the people the information about what goes on. I don't have to feed into that negative energy that I have. Now, that being said, I'm no master of it. I've worked really hard to get better at it, but I still have times where I wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning in a cold sweat and I'm anxious about something and might not be able to figure out exactly what it is that's making me anxious. Mm-hmm. And in that point, I will do some self-reflection. But at 2 o'clock in the morning, guys, the most important thing is to get back to sleep. Yeah. It's not doom scrolling. It's not playing Mahjong. It's not looking at the box scores from the night before, which I've done all of those things. In the middle of the night, and then I don't fall back asleep. So then I really try to practice some mindfulness. Then I really try to work on my breathing. I really try to put my feet on the ground and push down to make sure that I feel grounded, that I can have a sensory experience in which I know that's real. I know standing on the floor in my living room is real. I know where I'm at. I know what that means. And I've said this to you before, and if this will be a nice light moment to end the show on, I also have a weighted Eeyore that is on our couch. And when I can't sleep, Eeyore's butt is weighted. I know that sounds kind of strange, but if I put that weighted Eeyore on my stomach and chest area and lay on my back, and usually 5 or 10 minutes, I'm calm enough to be able to fall back asleep no matter what I'm thinking about, no matter what I'm befalling. And generally when I do that, I think about old like White Sox teams from the 1980s and try to reflect on their lineup and who was in their rotation. And that helps me calm down enough to be able to get back to sleep. So folks, it's not like genius techniques here. It's like doing what works. But I wanted to ask you that question about that, because I feel like anxiety is sort of like the silent killer of men. You know, we're expected to be able to handle stuff on our own. We're not expected to, you know, go out and have friends and talk to people about the things that are really most innermost important to us. And so I want to encourage any of you that are listening to the show that if you're having those types of thoughts, or if you're having negative self thoughts, or you think that you have to handle these things alone, that's going to worsen your anxiety if you try to handle it alone. So reach out for help. Dave and I are always available via DMs. I know a lot of people in a lot of different places in the United States that you can reach out. You can reach out to for resources. I've done that a number of times. It's way more important than the show that we do. Your mental health and getting help for things that you need is way more important than Dave and I talking about fantasy baseball every week for an hour. Although it is incredibly important to us, it's not even the most important thing that we do on a weekly basis. Please be well. Dave, any final thoughts for our listening audience this week?
Two things. One, happy Father's Day to all the fathers, the uncles, the grandfathers, anyone out there who is an influence on children anywhere. Keep doing what you're doing, and here's to you. The second thing is our quote for the week. A baseball game is simply a nervous breakdown divided into 9 innings. Earl Wilson.
Well, especially since we just told everybody not to panic, Dave, that's a great quote to end on. It's true, though. I mean, if you've ever coached a game, even if you haven't, or if you just watched your own kids play, boy, it can really be a stressful situation if you think about it.
Yeah.
A lot of times when I go out to the pitcher's mound and I talk to the guys and they're really stressed out, I like to take my hand and put it on their heart and I'll say, well, I mean, here's the thing. Like, either we're going to get this guy out or we're not. And either we're going to win or we're going to lose. And there's really not much you can do about that. You know, that's just the way that it kind of goes. And so it's remembering that it's a game, remembering that fantasy baseball is a game that we all love to play, but it's a game at the end of the day, and it's nothing that we have to take super seriously. So Happy Thursday night, Dave. Have a great weekend. Have a great Father's Day weekend. Folks, we'll be back with you guys next Saturday. Thank you for your patience and listening to the show on Sunday, even though we're recording on Thursday night, just because of my crazy schedule that I have. We will talk to you soon. Hang in there. Hang in there with your fantasy teams. Don't give up on them. and have a great weekend. Thanks for listening.